Our next case, as attorneys are leaving and new attorneys come up, is A23-0528 Spring Grove Township versus, I hope I pronounced this correctly, Brian, Myra, Karen Fried et al.
Morning, Your Honors.
Morning. As you're getting settled, I'll simply remind you of the rules. As all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. Respondent will have, 15 minutes for their argument. And then finally, appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Whenever counsel for the appellant is ready, just approach the podium and tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
Again, Your Honors, my name is Thomas Mandrian, and I represent Brian Myra, the appellant. And this case, Your Honor, involves a alleged township road that Mr. Myra was found to have criminally trespassed on after a bench trial. We're asking the court to reverse that decision because of the plain error by the judge when she found the existence of a roadway, a public roadway, when there was no proof of such establishment. The plaintiff brought a declaratory judgment action, and that declaratory judgment action sought a declaration from the court that there was township road created by either statutory creation under 164.07, that wasn't even the complaint they're talking about, common law dedication, and lastly, statutory prescriptive dedication. That's the six-year statute under 160.05. But the problem, Your Honors, is that at the time of the trial, the only roadway that was ever established under the 1873 statute, or I should say proceeding by Spring Grove Township, was State Line Road. And if I may, this is really rudimentary. You saw the pictures, but this is backwards from you, but it's east to west. There's a couple of homes. And at the last hump, Mr. Myra resides with his family. And State Line Road used to go from 16 to 11 over the humps, and then it went into Iowa and wound around. They called it State Line Road for a reason, because the property is right there. But in the 1940s, that was established by that section. That road suffered a bridge washout and no longer was used from about the 40s to the 50s, all the way to present. Overgrown, there's no dispute that that road was impassable.
And you're talking about the road that's west of Myra's property.
Yes, the former state of the yes, that portion. Yes, be clear.
Okay.
That portion was then impassable from that point on. So when the township opened their case, they had to prove it was DL Drive, not State Line Road. And what they did in their opening statement is said a 1986 recorded document, the resolution from the township, created the Hill Drive, which would be over the humps and stop at that Iowa location. The problem is those documents didn't establish the roadway. They themselves refer to Chapter 505, which says this document is to be filed properly to put people on notice that there is a claim here, doesn't establish it. In other words, the 40-year statute, the application of the Archival Title Act would be prevented by that recording. And of course, we are going to do our marketable title defense and present the case for trial. And the court found that there was a road established under 164.07. That's State Line Road. That's not the legal drive. And it was shown at the time of trial that This retracement, which is what the surveyors call it when they're trying to recreate a roadway, this retracement didn't follow at all state line road. State line road was established by petition, and there's a description.
Mr. Mannion, I would like to interrupt you to give you a hypothetical. Part of your arguments is that you're relying on an estoppel defense. Mm-hmm. Would you agree that part of that estoppel defense it requires that any reliance your client had must be reasonable?
I agree.
All right, let's assume this hypothetical. You have a contract with Mr. Smith, and there's allegedly a breach of that contract, and there's a 6-year statute of limitations. You then come to me, Judge Connolly, and I sign a piece of paper that says the 6-year statute of limitations in the Jones case doesn't apply. Signed, Francis Connolly, Judge. And then later you get Judge Smith and Judge Reyes to sign that same piece of paper. And then you bring your breach of contract action 7 years later. And the other side brings a motion to dismiss saying you blew the statute. Do you think you can rely on that piece of paper that I signed, Judge Smith signed, and Judge Reyes signed to get around the 6-year statute of limitations?
I don't think so.
How on earth then is that hypothetical different from this case? Well, what your client got.
Yeah, getting to that is a secondary argument besides the argument I just made. This is a representation of fact within the control of the township. This is a representation of fact within their control. In your case, no one has control over the statute of limitations. It's a legal question, not a question of fact. And in this case, they said, by the way, this document, that's Exhibit 26, says State Line Road runs between 16 and the Mark Marr property. That describes it. Mark Marr is the man that sold them to Myra. It says any roadway to the west of that property is hereby vacated.
Are you saying that the document signed by the township officers was binding in somehow?
I do. That was the secondary argument. It was not the argument I just mentioned.
How does a government speak? How do they make rules and decisions?
Well, you know, there's a body of law based upon things like open meeting laws, requirements of motions, a motion and a second, and a majority vote. Typically, it can be some other than it could be a supermajority depending upon.
But a government body only speaks through their resolutions and the action that they take at meetings. This was not at a meeting.
I don't think that prevents Mr. Meyer from reasonably relying on that. If this was a condemnation case, definitely.
If I go to the mayor and say I want to vacate the road here and he signs it, should I rely on that?
The mayor?
Yeah.
I would say that's not the body that would be involved.
Okay, well, let's say I went to 3 of the 5 commissioners in the county or in the town.
I think you would have to look at the doctrine of authority, actual and apparent authority, and look at the elements to decide if that's something you could rely on under the circumstances.
So you're saying that a government body doesn't have to take any formal action to have it binding on them?
I don't think it does to create estoppel. For something else, like a condemnation action, there has to be a resolution. We all know that. For certain things, for establishing a district, a special district, a TIF district, there would have to be some sort of resolution recorded. Bond council would require this resolution. But in the circumstances of Mr. Myra, when he asked for assurance, he got it from signed by all the people on the council. I don't think it's a defense for them to say, oh, it didn't mean anything. It's not what the paper is written on because we didn't have a meeting. I mean, I think that's something that.
But then how does everybody else have notice? I mean, he's got this piece of paper in his pocket signed by everybody. How does then everyone else know that that exists and that there's notice to everyone about what's happened to the road. I mean, that would seem to me to be encouraging kind of, you know, well, as long as you got some friends on the board, by God, you know, things can happen. And here's this piece of paper and you can have it in your pocket for years from now. And, you know, whatever. I mean, that just seems not the way government is supposed to work.
Well, the facts of this case, respectfully, Mr. Meyer bought the property in 2007. And these alleged obstructions were there, some before he bought it, up until 7 years ago when this lawsuit started. It would seem to me that somebody didn't see any urgency to notify, you know, anybody, neighbors and such. And by the way, this is a declaratory judgment. We're trying to see if there is, in fact, a ruling. I think he didn't. It was reasonable. I think the reliance is clear. He actually built an extension on a barn that encroached on the recreated road. Want to speak a little bit more about
that? Let me just ask, your principal argument was estoppel, though, was it not?
That was our defense.
Okay.
That was not, this gets me to probably the rebuttal. We do not have to prove our case. When the case is all over, we have every right. If it's a court, if it's a jury trial, we might ask for anything. If it's a bench trial, you know, we can ask for a decision that there was no roadway. This came up when the court made not any decision about common law dedication, made a decision that there were, didn't talk about the maintenance statute or statute road, said it was created under 164.07. And we brought that to the court's attention and motion for amended findings that it didn't create it that way.
But it, help me understand, your argument is estoppel, that it was abandoned, correct?
Estoppel was that, that was our defense, definitely, yes.
And, okay.
And the court said that we never definitely said that.
For estoppel, though, the party asserting estoppel has the burden of proof on that.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. And there are five elements of estoppel?
Yeah.
But you're only challenging two.
Well, there's a detrimental reliance. It's reasonable. And in the city context, there's some case law that says, well, I think this is equitable estoppel. There has to be some sort of malfeasance or some sort of skullduggery going on here. And, you know, and there wasn't skullduggery going on here. We didn't assert that. We asserted a case that said, nonetheless, you know, those elements, reliance, reasonableness, actual reliance, the fact that the promise was clear, got to be clear, that we think this was a clear promise. I can sense from the court's questioning that you're focused on the defense, but I can cover that more, but I really want to emphasize that we feel that there are no findings that establish that there is a road here called Speed Hill Drive. And to finish my argument, I did not go back to the 1873 description and create any portion of this alleged roadway up to the Iowa border because that description didn't meet what I saw on the ground. It didn't meet fences. I didn't mean other things. He says, well, I created a road with him based upon those that I saw, not recreating the description.
But that's not what the district court found, though. The district court found that Meyer had stipulated at trial that Bee Hill Drive was actually established as a road.
No. Mr. Meyer stipulated at trial that there was a road there at one time, which was State Line Road. When they trotted out their maps, their old maps,
we said so you're saying the district court's finding is wrong?
We tried to bring that up. That wasn't a stipulation. That was not equivalent. I don't know why we would have tried this case just on estoppel when they had to prove their case. They proved there was a case road there at one time, State Line Road. We could not find any indication of it, although we went back to 1952 and tried to find some.
What are we to make of the court's credibility findings as to your client's testimony, in particular that your client didn't even answer your questions? I mean, that's problematic, isn't it?
Well, not necessarily if you consider the context in which the questions were asked. The context was...
Well, you're asking them. Why didn't he answer them?
Well, because I asked him what, if you remember, what was told him at the time that document was signed.
And did he say, I don't remember?
He didn't answer. I don't know if he
answered. Well, he didn't. I mean, there's a difference between saying, look, I don't have a great memory. So if someone asked me, do you remember blah, blah, blah? I would say, well, I don't know. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. But I think I'd answer the question. And when you don't answer a question, even of your own lawyer, it's suggesting that your client might be trying to hide something, which at least sort of goes to part of the equitable arguments you're making. I understand that's not your main argument, but it seems to me the court placed great weight on your client's lack of credibility in making its factual findings. Is that wrong?
I think to understand that, there was substantial testimony as to whether this roadway was actually used or not. The court said that the witnesses that Mr. Myra produced, including himself, including Mrs. Welch, were not credible.
And isn't that within the court's prerogative?
Yeah, I think that's on the issue of whether this was being used routinely or at all from 1986 until the argument was that this roadway, nobody uses it. It's got all kinds of stuff on it, nobody uses it. So that was really problematic for Mr. Myra, definitely, because that credibility, besides him, other witnesses, were under real attack, or I should say suspicion by the court. That's the context that I see that in. And nobody followed up on that to answer the question. But, you know, did you answer your question? I guess I won't get into that because I don't think it really applies, as the court mentioned.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mann. You will have rebuttal.
All right.
You're welcome, sir. We'll now hear for counsel for the respondent, please.
Morning, Your Honors. It's John Giesen representing Spring Grove Township. As Mr. Mannion stated, this case involves township's efforts to require Mr. Myra to clear obstructions of the township public right-of-way after Mr. Myra fenced off that road with a goat pen. There's two findings that are challenged. The first is establishment of the road or dedication. The second is the estoppel defense. I think the primary argument you're hearing now is that this road was never proved to have been established.
Why is Mr. Mannion wrong on that subject?
Yeah, he stipulated that trial twice that State Line Road was established, and there is absolutely no evidence of anything but a nominal difference between State Line Road and Bee Hill Drive.
That's not his position, though. His position is that they're quite different, right?
I think that's his position, but that position is not supported by any evidence in the record.
And why is it not?
The only expert surveyor that Judge Leahy heard from was Eric Schmidt, the Houston County surveyor. And you can read Exhibit 19. That's Mr. Schmidt's retracement survey. And his testimony as well is consistent with that survey. This was not Bee Hill Drive being laid out as a new path cutting along the Iowa-Minnesota border. Bee Hill Drive was merely a renaming of the road that always existed. That's why it's a retracement survey. Mr. Schmidt looked at the historical plat maps. He looked at the original road order. He looked at aerial photography. Over 150 years, the evidence is that this road, including the part of the road in question, has always existed in the same spot. In fact, the gravel bed is still there. Granted, it is not, you know, it's not I-90, but it was a road that was continuing to be used for over 100 years continuously. And that finding has not been challenged. Public use is, at least for purposes of the appeal now, is a law of the case. So our primary argument on the dedication issue is that this is outside the scope of this court's normal review. Normally, the appellant has to show that, hey, this is what I argued in district court. There's been no effort by Mr. Mannion to say, hey, here's what I argued. I argued that there was a difference, more than a nominal difference, between State Line Road and Bee Hill Drive. He did not introduce an expert surveyor to prove that fact. There is absolutely no evidence to back that up. And in my recollection, it was not even argued. It was just something at best was raised for the first time in post-trial motions. But again, you know, putting aside the scope of the review issue, the standard review is undisputedly clear error. And Judge Leahy found Mr. Schmidt was a credible witness. So beyond the stipulation that the road existed, she also credited the testimony of Mr. Schmidt. Again, if you went through the history, there's dozens of exhibits for the court to look at that confirm Mr. Schmidt's testimony. At this late stage, Mr. Schmidt's credibility should not be revisited by this court. The real issue that was actually being tried was this abandonment defense. And great weight was put on this, we called it the Wistie note. Mike Wistie is the clerk of the Spring Grove Township Board.
Before you get there, I just want to ask you one thing. It says the survey description for the center line of the roadway within the 1873 document does not fit well within the road as it exists today. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's...
Does that make it a different road or the same road?
Well, he was looking at the 1873 road order, and there's a legal description written in there. He then compared it to plat maps over the next century and a half and aerial photography as soon as that was available. And the original legal description that Mr. Schmidt described didn't clearly line up with what the road actually always was.
So what you're saying is that the road was created, but not exactly along the legal description in the 1873 document.
Yes. So this wasn't D Hill Drive being, some new legal description or road. That was going back to the original, if you want to, what our theory was, we've got various theories of how it was approved establishment that was actually in dispute. The common law dedication simply requires there to be some evidence of the public intending to donate or give the road, dedicate the road to public use and acceptance of that. And that goes back all the way to 1873. Again, our position has been, and all the evidence shows, that the only difference between Bee Hill Drive and State Line Road is a name. It was simply an effort, and I didn't track down the actual law that required this, but the testimony was in the 1990s or thereabout, there was an effort to improve first responder response times, and having unique road names like Bee Hill Drive would help with that. There's another name for the road as well. It's Township Road 20, and that appears in Exhibit 18, the recorded township road map. But again, just because it's referred to as a township road number and it has a common name doesn't mean that there are two different roads in existence. So, again, the evidence as to where the road was described by Mr. Schmidt goes back to State Line Road and Bee Hill Drive. They're one and the same. Again, I think the main issue that we were trying was this estoppel defense. And again, great weight was put by Mr. Myra on this Wistie note, which they said any road running west from Mr. Myra's property was officially abandoned. And granted, there was probably some informality with the signature of that note.
That would be an understatement.
Right.
But I mean, at the end of the day, he's not a lawyer. As to the reasonableness of it, I have no idea how things are run in Spring Grove Township, but my hunch is it's not the same as, the United States Senate. Why wouldn't it be reasonable if he got all these people to sign the piece of paper saying what it says? Why wouldn't he think, I'm done. Here you go. Why wouldn't it be reasonable for a non-lawyer to rely on a document signed by, these city elders saying what it says?
And I think that's exactly what Judge Leahy found. He could reasonably rely on what that note said. And the note said, any road running west from the property is officially abandoned. And that's exactly what that road is covered with trees. There's no visible gravel bed. So take the note for what it says. It says road running west from his property is officially abandoned. But putting that aside, let's assume, the note was reasonably relied on. We're disputing that, but you can take that as true. There's more than one element of a estoppel defense to prove that the public is no longer allowed to assert public right-of-way. There's five elements, and most of those are not even being disputed at this point. So our main position is that this, any error in, say on one element is harmless. There are adverse findings against Mr. Myra on every element, including, most importantly, the public continuing to reuse this road. One of the landowners would have been landlocked. It would not be able to get to their Iowa land. It had this, the piece of road that Mr. Myra claims was abandoned. If that were true, an Iowa landowner would be landlocked. Another owner, Mr. Platten, continued to use that road every year, he said, testified, to get to his hunting land. the Freeds continued to walk on that road. So, I mean, it wasn't I-90. It wasn't a very, I think the district court's wording was correct that, you know, this was reused regularly but sporadically, consistent with a township road in this location. But that is fatal to an estoppel defense. Again, the Reeves Landing case, I don't think has even been challenged. I think Mr. Mannion said on his argument that he agrees that there's five elements of estoppel he has to prove. So I think the note, you know, we assert it says what it says, and Mr. Meyer could reasonably rely on what it says. And it says the road running west from the property is officially abandoned. And that's exactly what Judge Leahy found. But that's not the piece of road in dispute. The other piece of that is, let's say he's right and it was ambiguous. Let's look at the parole evidence here. Mr. Wistie testified that Mr. Meyer and him were talking about when they were signing that note, the road running west of the property. There's two county roads, County Road 4 and 16, and State Line Road or Beagle Drive, I think up to the 50s, connected these two county roads. And that's the road running west of his property, would connect those two county roads. And Mr. Wistie testified, well, when he came to me and we were talking about it, he wanted to make sure that County Road 4 and County Road 16 didn't connect again. He didn't want a through road. Mr. Mannion then asked Mr. Meyer on a direct exam, is that what he testified? And there was probably, I don't know if it was a minute, 5 minutes, it felt like a prolonged silence. And ultimately, Mr. Mannion did withdraw that question. And I think Judge Leahy, as the finder of fact in this case, was entitled to take that as evasiveness and is justified in finding that Mr. Meyer was simply not a credible witness. So overall, I think, you know, unless the court has further questions, I think the primary issue that's now being raised is not specifically in the district court. Dedication was stipulated more than once. There is no evidence for this court to look at that would show that Beagle Drive is some new path other than the original road that has existed for over 100 years. In any event, the evidence on the location of the road was exclusively provided by the township, including the Houston County Surveyor. Mr. Meyer did not introduce any rebuttal expert testimony. The best the court can look at is Court Exhibit C, which was an attempt at a freehand sketch, which was properly rejected as just lacking credibility. So the township met its burden to prove that a road existed, not only because of two stipulations, but also on the great weight of evidence. And on the estoppel defense, there are multiple elements that are lacking and they're not even being contested. So even if he, you know, Mr. Meyer is able to establish that, hey, I should have had a proper or a better finding on one of these elements, any error is harmless. So we're asking the court to affirm.
Thank you. Mr. Mannion, you'll have the last word, sir.
May it please the court. We just talked about Mr. Myra relying on a piece of paper that wasn't done properly under the channels of a resolution, et cetera. Counsel didn't mention that chapter 164.07 requires an action by a council if a road is renamed or relocated. In this case, both things happened. It's not State Line Road, it's Beagle Drive. It doesn't go where State Line Road used to go. It doesn't even go where State Line Road went up to the Myers property and passed the Iowa border. Their own surveyor said, description of this road done in 1873. He didn't say, boy, I can't follow it. I can't make any sense on it. He says, that doesn't accurately match what I see today. Didn't say, I looked at this map and that map and this map and that map. And that's he just retraced it based upon the ground. It could have easily been a private easement. Could have been an easement by prescription. Might still be an easement by prescription, but that claim wasn't made at trial. It's always been clear that the public using this road has been really small. Landowners nearby.
Doesn't matter how small it is, though, as long as it is still being publicly used.
Oh, it doesn't, except that it goes just as much to the fact that it could be a private easement as much as it could be public road. That's all I'm saying. You still have to establish where the road is. their surveyor said this road doesn't follow the description. Would have been nice for him at least to say this is where the old description takes me, and this is where the new road is that I see based on what's on the ground. You notice that fences weren't asked to be moved, even though he says they come onto the road today. So I'm gonna go around those. He didn't ask that those be removed. He just decided to draw a roadway that took into account what he wanted to take into account. Which isn't sufficient. If we're not going to hold this township, the duty of grading that road under 16407, which is mandatory, how in the world can we hold Mr. Meyer responsible for trespassing on a road that isn't really documented as such, not recorded as such? Remember, at the outset, they said this road was established by 1986 document. Didn't say this is an old road based upon state line road. Didn't say that. Only when we pointed out an absence of fact to support their road did they come up with this common law dedication. And council misspoke on that. It takes a landowner to dedicate property. It has to be an act of a landowner. Unequivocally indicate he wants this to be used for items. Mr. Meyer didn't testify that he dedicated it a common law dedication. Nobody did. It was 16407 State Line Road. Period. Now, the rest of the arguments about a stop road and such, you might really think that. By the way, the judge said, besides credibility, says this document is clear. It's unambiguous. I don't have to even get to really the interpretation of this promise. I can decide that it's clearly unambiguous in favor of the township. Says that besides the surveyor, their surveyor says State Line Road starts at 16 and ends at the Mark property. That's State Line Road. He said it. To me, that's clear. But if it's not clear, that's what we're talking about. We always give parameters when we give descriptions. You might say Highway 16, hereby described, follows. He told us where State Line was. They didn't go past his house because they let everything else go. Nothing was being used. By the way, does it make sense to interpret this as unambiguous when the surveyor said this promise, this document was ambiguous? Why would the township prepare a document letting something go that they had no intention of improving? Why would the township sign it up as a document letting something go, which would be to the west, when they didn't have complete jurisdiction over it? It would take an Iowa entity. It's State Line Road. It goes into Iowa. Comes back out of Minnesota. They just couldn't meet that promise if that's what they wanted. That was the question really Mr. Meyer was asked, and he didn't understand it, obviously. But that doesn't go to the other arguments I have.
Thank you, Mr. Mannion.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Giesen. The matter is submitted. We will be issuing our decision within 90 days.